The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Tonight we've got Linda Godfrey. She's going to be joining us, and she's just incredible to have on. She's a researcher and investigator of werewolves, Bigfoot, similar creatures for over 24 years. She's the author of 16 published books on strange creatures, places, and people, and she's got a book out there, The Beast of Bray Road, Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America, and American Monsters.
I remember talking to her many, many months ago. I don't remember what month it was. We had her on the podcast program, the streaming program that we were doing, and she was fascinating. Not only was she fascinating, but I remember her telling us some pretty cool details about the Beast of Bray Road story that she broke in the newspaper, if I remember correctly, as a reporter, and it kind of turned her life into one of being an investigative reporter of cryptids, and obviously she's written a lot of books about it. So she's a fascinating guest, and we're really lucky to have her on tonight.
Hey gang, it's JV here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Beyond Reality Radio. Some of you are new to the program, and some of you have been with us for years. And no matter if you're interested in ghosts, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy discussions, or any of the other topics we explore on this program, we do it for you. Our goal here is to help find answers to some of the world's most enduring mysteries. And as we continue to bring you interviews and discussions each night, it's important that we get your feedback and, even more importantly, your support. The media landscape is forever changing, and as it does, we need to be able to change with it. That's why it's important for you, right now, to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Once on YouTube, just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Subscribe. It's all free, and it'll make you part of our global community. In addition, Beyond Reality Radio is available as a podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Beyond Reality Radio and subscribe there as well. And finally, we have an archive program that you may enjoy as well. This show can be found on major podcast platforms, and it's called Beyond Reality Paranormal. By supporting us in one or all of those places, you can be sure we'll be able to continue to deliver quality shows to you, no matter what form the media landscape takes. As a paranormal historian, I promise you the best and most entertaining conversations as we continue to hunt for the truth.
All right, so let's go to our guest line and bring in our guest, Linda Godfrey. Linda is a researcher and an investigator of werewolves, Bigfoot, and similar creatures for 24 years. Also the author of 16 published books on strange creatures, places, and people, such as The Beast of Bray Road and many others. Linda, thanks so much for being on Beyond Reality Radio. Good to have you on the program.
Hi, Jason and JV. Thanks so much for having me.
Why don't you, for the people who don't know who you are, and we've been talking about you for the better part of a week and a half here leading up to your appearance, but tell people who you are and exactly what you do.
Well, I am a resident of southeastern Wisconsin, lifelong, and I got into this life interest of strange creatures sort of by accident when I was working as a newspaper reporter here in southeastern Wisconsin, and people of my own hometown of Elkhorn started saying they were seeing what they would describe as a werewolf, if there was such a thing, usually running across the road on this four-mile-long country road called Bray Road, right outside of Elkhorn, just east of it toward Burlington. And I found out that our county animal control officer had a file folder marked werewolf that he shared with me. And now, when you've got a county officer with a file folder marked werewolf in his office, you know, that's news right there. And so it became a news story. And when I began to interview the people that had been calling into him, I was very intrigued because they didn't seem like liars. You know, they weren't looking for any kind of, in fact, they wanted to remain anonymous at first. They weren't looking for any kind of fame or fortune. They just wanted to find out what this was, and that's why they were calling this guy. And that seemed, you know, just very normal and truthful to me, and I decided to find out, if I could, what it was that they had seen. And so that kind of started me off on my lifelong quest to figure these things out and answer the question, why are people seeing these? Because they were not, this handful of there were like 6 to 12 right away that came out and told me about their experiences. And what I found out when the story broke very quickly was that there were people not just in Wisconsin, not just Bay Road, not just Wisconsin, not just the U.S., but Canada, South America, Europe, all over the place. There were people seeing what sounded like this exact same creature, something that looked like a wolf or wolf-German Shepherd hybrid that could easily run, jump, leap on their hind legs and seem to do so as their major means of getting around. So that was just kind of mind-blowing to me, and it's left me curious, you know, not only as to what the creature is, but, you know, why do people, if it isn't something real, if it isn't something we can catch and put our finger on and catalog and, you know, give a genus name and everything to, then why do people keep seeing it? You know, there's just a great mystery here to be solved. And so 17 books later, they aren't all exactly on that creature, but most of them are somewhat related. You know, I'm still searching for those answers and have more ideas now than I used to, but still don't have that elusive, just like Bigfoot, you know, we don't have that one in front of us to declare the final proof.
Yeah. Well, and the first reports of the Beast of Bray Road was actually back in 1936, correct?
Well, it may or may not have been the same creature. It had a little bit different description. It was not on Bray Road or even in the same county. It was in Jefferson County, which is the county north of Walworth. And it was there was a witness sketch drawn. The witness actually directed his son, who was something of an artist, to draw it while the witness himself was on his deathbed, or believed he was on his deathbed.
Okay.
And he just wanted to pass this on to him. But it almost looks like something between a Bigfoot and the upright canine, which is not what anybody really ever describes if they get a good look at it. It's usually either plainly canine or plainly primate and Bigfoot. You know, there's just very much difference between head shapes and muzzles and feet and legs and things like that. But so this one, according to the sketch, sort of could have been either. And even he heard it make a sound that he described as Gadara, which could have been either a primitive word or it could have been just sort of a pronounced growl, because the G and the R sounds are, you know, what you hear when an animal growls.
Okay.
And that one is a little ambiguous. Over toward Jefferson, we do have Bigfoot sightings. So, you know, it could have been an early Bigfoot sighting just as well.
And I know that, well, reports of the description of this thing is anywhere from 400 to 700 pounds. And when it's standing on its hind legs, it sits 7 feet or taller. When it's standing on all four, it's around 2 to 4 feet tall. And that's all correct, right?
No.
Wow, geez, okay.
I think it's thanks to a couple of certain TV shows where they weren't clear between what the witnesses were trying to describe it. There was one in particular that had a number of cases on that were all around in the same area. But some of the witnesses, and if you read my book, Hunting the American Werewolf, you'll know which ones they are. Some of the witnesses were sure they had seen Bigfoot, were clearly explaining Bigfoot and didn't want it to be seen as anything but Bigfoot. And yet it was portrayed on the show. You know how they'll snip a sentence here, snip a sentence there. And it was portrayed on the show as all being the upright wolfman. At least that's what you would think. And so when you see Bigfoot, that's where you get the poundages of 400 to 700. When people are clear that it's the wolfman, it's normally like 150, maybe to 200 at the most. Maybe 250 at the very outside, but that would be a rather small Bigfoot. So when you see those giant poundages, it's most likely was a Bigfoot witness that was somehow, conflated with the dog man on a TV show. Almost all of I've had a lot of experience with the TV shows, and almost all of them will fudge something or other, you know, just to fit their script a little bit better, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've seen that happen a lot. Yeah, I was going to say, because 400 to 700 pounds and being on all 4 feet and being about 2 to 4 feet would almost sound like a common black bear. So it was
right.
It definitely was. It had always made me wonder on a lot of those reports.
I will add real quickly, too. The dogmen do go just as easily on all fours as they do on two legs. And many times witnesses will see them standing up and then they drop down and run away on four, or vice versa. They'll be on all four and then they'll rise up and chase on two legs. And Bigfoots also have many eyewitness reports of them running as a quadruped when they are, especially when they're in the area where there are humans, through neighborhoods and that sort of thing.
Linda, did you say that you had really no interest in this topic at all, and you just happened to write that article, and that kind of fueled, you know, the response and the curiosity became fueled at that point?
Well, when I say that, I mean particularly things that look like werewolf, because it hadn't really occurred to me that there could be something like that outside of myth and legend. I was always interested in Bigfoot. My dad had lots of the old men's magazines around in the 60s, like Argosy and Sports Afield, where they were printing those first articles by some of the very first cryptozoologists.
Yeah.
And I was, and you'd see the picture of Bigfoot on the cover, you know. And then there were the Myra Shackley books that came along. So I was always very interested in Bigfoot, UFOs, that sort of thing, psychic phenomena. So I had the interest in the general field, but not in that particular species.
You had said, and I remember you talking about this when you were on our program a while ago, that this particular case is somewhat unique in the sense that there's actually a government file, or there was anyway, a government file about it, which kind of adds some credibility that you don't see in a lot of these kinds of cases.
Well, that was the file that I mentioned in the beginning, our county animal control officer. So he was, you know, I guess in a sense, a government official. He was contracted by the county government. So you could say it was a government file, I guess. But, I mean, it was in his office. I happened to, when I first heard about this story, you know, and I started asking around, I was already working with him because he was doing an undercover sting on a puppy mill, you know, and I was planning to cover that. And so I had asked him if he'd heard about it, and that's when he showed me the file. So, you know, it was legitimately a government document. And it's interesting because not too long after all of that came out, and he was, of course, quoted in my story and in the newspapers for his opinions about the creature and everything. But he actually lost his job. There was sort of a big turnover, and it was really just kind of a strange situation. You know, I never personally understood why he was removed, you know, so that happened. And then somehow when all the changeover happened, that file was lost and gone.
I was just going to ask you that because I remembered you saying that the file disappeared. Now, when he showed you the file, did you get a chance to actually read it? And if you did, what did it say?
Well, it was a manila file folder, and in it were pages that he had taken notes on when people called him, you know, and had the person's name and their phone number, and just a basic, quick description of what they had said, you know, where it was and the time and what it looked like, that kind of thing. So it wasn't like there were pages and pages of typed up documents. It was basically his notes of the callers he shared those that contact information with me, and that's how I was able to go and find the first witnesses and talk to them. So that was interesting.
Did he himself go out and investigate any of these reports?
I don't really believe so. His best guess as to what they were, he was telling people that he felt that they were seeing a coyote. Now, remember, these people were reporting something that was between 5 and 7 feet tall. Coyotes are really not large. He was telling them what they saw was a coyote that somehow leaped up when it saw their car and managed to kind of hang suspended for a moment while the car's headlights, you know, flashed on its eyes, so that they thought it was a really tall thing, but really it was just a coyote jumping high in the air.
That sounds like a magic bullet theory in the Kennedy case to me. It's kind of, you know, the bullet turns left, takes a right, jumps up, goes down. So would it be your impression at that point that he didn't necessarily take them seriously, despite the fact he had a file folder called Werewolf? He didn't necessarily take the reports very seriously.
I think that he was much more he was working on that puppy mill thing, and it had quite a few other projects that I think he was very busy with at the time, and this wasn't something he could really easily explain. So I think that's why he probably didn't delve more deeply into it. But at that time, in that same time frame, there was a sheriff's deputy that it was a DNR agent, Department of Natural Resources agent, that was called out to a farm, again, in Jefferson County, which just north, who I was able to interview later, who did go and investigate a call from a woman who was being harassed. She had a tall, furry animal come up right to her front porch, and then she saw it go out to the horse barn and heard her horse scream, and the horse was left with big slashes on its neck. And the creature to me sounds much more like a Bigfoot. It wasn't ever completely determined, but the officer told me he did see prints, you know, in the mud. It went through her garden. He did see the slashes on the horse's neck. He believed the woman's story. You know, she had enough corroborating evidence. So it was investigated by at least that one official, you know, back in those times that was willing to talk about it and affirm the witness.
Well, and the tough thing is, I'm sure that, especially with all these experiences, that there's some claims that you're able to just chalk off as just people looking for attention, and they're out there claiming they ran into this. But out of all the claims that you've really investigated, how many of them do you actually believe are legit?
I believe that most of the people who contact me are legitimate. I know there are other hoaxers out there. I know of at least four different hoaxing incidents on Bray Road over the years, and only one of them was someone who contacted me, and he wasn't trying to put anything over. He was just like, ha ha, I went out there in a gorilla suit just to goof around, you know, that kind of thing. And the other ones never attempted to contact me at all. I just knew about them from other people who saw them and knew who they were and told me about them. But for the most, and even then, you'd think that if they were affecting the numbers of witnesses, that I would have been able to connect them to certain witness reports, you know, that would have seen them about the time that they were going out and doing this. But that never happened either. It was almost like they kind of went out and did their thing and, you know, jumped out in the road and said boo, and nothing really came of it. They just had some fun. There were two brothers I know that had werewolf masks, and there was another man that had a bear suit. So, you know, I know these things happen, but most of the people, if they're going to talk to me and tell me their full story, you know, I believe most of them are sincere. They may not have seen exactly an upright cane. I think there are times when there have been mistaken identities, when perhaps
they did see a
really big farm dog.
Times.
Do you think that's a common problem when it comes to people like yourself who are out trying to get to the bottom? I mean, we know people hoax, but how common is it, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, it's hard to say because they don't all get caught, but I think it happens fairly frequently, and I've never been one to shy away from that or deny it. I think you have to put it out there so that you can actually distinguish between the hoaxers and the sincere people. It irritates me that they do it because it causes a lot of trouble. It's dangerous, not only for them. Those two brothers that were wearing the masks on Bray Road quit because they were shot at, and that happens, you know, more than once. There are a lot of people carrying guns in this world. And then you may remember a couple of years ago in Montana, there was the man who wore a ghillie suit trying to impersonate a Bigfoot, ran out in the road and was hit by not one but two vehicles, killing him dead. You know, so it doesn't always end up well for the hoaxer either.
Well, and they don't take that into consideration when they're doing this. It's more just out of the quick thought of let's go and try to scare somebody or
let's see if we can get away with it or something. You know,
they're so dumb. We'll just show them how easy we can fool them. I think that's another motivation.
Well, exactly.
Right, exactly. And not only that, it's dangerous if you're driving down the road with your kids. And something jumps out in the road and you swerve to try and avoid it, you could have an accident and you and your kids be hurt. So, you know, they could possibly cause injuries to other people.
Lyle Blackburn was our guest. Was it last week, Jay? I think it was last week.
Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he was talking about there's sometimes some confusion between a lizard man creature and a bipedal wolfman
or anything. Just because the hair gets all matted down because it's wet, it's in a swampy area or whatever, and also just because all the moss and the algae in the water of that area a lot of times will give a coat a different color look, a green look, and is like that.
Yeah, so do you share that opinion, or have you heard anything that would substantiate that?
Well, I think that any time you've got some kind of animal that's normally a quadruped walking on its hind legs, depending on light and shadow and distance and things like that, it might be very easy to mistake one species, that, especially hoofed species and species that walk on their toe pads rather than, you know, bears are flat-footed, humans, Bigfoot, we're flat-footed, but you've got like goats, deer. I hear of goat men, deer men, lizard men. And lots of times, you know, people will say it's one thing or the other. And then I show them my sketch that I did quite a while ago that I called the Indigenous Dog Man, which is my kind of composite of what most people say they see. And they'll go, oh, that's what it was. That's what it was. You know, and they'll say that at first they said it was a lizard man, but now they think it's the dog man, or vice versa. You know, I have had a few situations where they thought maybe it was a werewolf-like creature, and then when they saw it more closely, you know, it didn't have the ears, it had scales. I had a lizard man that was seen in, or it wasn't reported directly to me, I shouldn't say I had, but there was a lizard man, I'm mixing up my stories here. there were several lizard man sightings in Wisconsin in the same year. One was reported to me directly, and that was a man and his son who were looking for a lost dog on the shore of one of the rivers in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is on the Mississippi, and then the Black River runs up northeast, easterly from it. And they got this sense to stop, and they looked, and there in the riverbed was this man-sized creature with scales, big slanted yellow eyes with slit pupils, and scales all over it, but its body was very, very humanoid. And they stood there looking at it for just a second, and then they ran, and it evidently went back in the water. They did later find their dog, so the dog wasn't lost. But the interesting thing is that right around that same time, if you follow the Black River up a certain ways, it gets up to Medford, and that's up in northern Wisconsin. And within a couple of days' time, both a state patrolman, actually it was, a state patrolman, and then separately a truck full of highway repair workers, each encountered a similar-looking guy or creature standing in the middle of the highway, and as they drew near, it snapped out a pair of previously hidden wings from behind its back and then just kind of soared up and away. So possibly the one that the guy saw in the riverbank also had the wings, but you know, I'm sure that at that first glance that they had at the creature, their minds were doing the little flip chart dance that people describe, where they're going, what is that? You know, cow, no, dog, no, horse, no, you know, lizard, no.
Right.
and it sometimes takes a while. But I've also had people tell me that they saw satyrs, which is, you know, the old term for like a goat man, I guess, would be the best word. And then change their minds and vice versa. And people, I think sometimes people may have also seen upright deer, which will stand like to feed. I've seen one in my own backyard, took a picture of it standing upright to feed at a bird feeder so it could reach it. or if there are particularly scrumptious leaves on a tree at a certain level, they'll stand up to get them. And somebody might come along and see that and see the big deer ears sticking out and the muzzle and assume that it's a dog man when it was really just a deer.
Yeah, well, deer will do that when in an aggressive stance too. They'll come at when threatened. They'll come at them kicking with the front legs on their hind legs. So yeah, I've seen that.
Now, Linda, this this creature that you said sprouted the wings and took off. About how tall would you say that creature was, or how tall did they say that creature was?
Well, it wasn't giant or anything. They described it as, you know, the size of a typical man.
So to think of a man-sized creature, you'd think that thing would have to have a good 10 to 12-foot wingspan, 10 to 14-foot wingspan, if you think about it.
No, what they actually remind me of, these things, because there was also the bat squatch in lacrosse, which was like it had bat-shaped wings and flew at these two men's pickup truck, and then at the last second just, again, zoomed up. It almost sounds like a man in a suit with a rocket pack and maybe little wings that would snap. I mean, if someone were going to design some kind of little wings for, you know, so it looked like it was flying, but it had, you know, like a rocket pack on its back. And, I mean, these things exist. People, they're getting more sophisticated now, but they've been in the works for quite some time. So that's a possibility. The people who saw these things, you know, none of them thought it was anything like that. And especially seeing the thing with kind of glowing yellow, huge eyes with slitted, you know, pupils, that didn't really look at all like, I mean, that would be a pretty big costume.
They would have had to have been really close to be able to see the pupils like that.
Well, they were. I mean, they walked almost, you know, right up on it. It was on the bank of the river, and as if it had just crawled out. And they were looking along the riverbank for their dog. So they were quite close. But
that makes you never want to swim in that river.
Exactly.
My name is Robert Welch. This is the road, Caledonia Road, the bridge that I fish off. We channel catfish here at night. Been fishing here for 20 years. In the last 2 years now, we've been getting growled at and hearing wood knocks and had large stones thrown at us and been chased out of our spot numerous times.
Linda, you probably recognize that soundbite from a witness by the name of Robert Welch. I'm not sure if you actually recorded that or interviewed Robert, but you know, he talks about having rocks thrown at him, hearing growls. Mm-hmm. Obviously, these creatures can be menacing, whatever they happen to be. And my question to you before we went into the break was, in any of your interviews or your discussions with eyewitnesses, have you seen any that have been really fearful, maybe for their lives or just in general, knowing that creature is close by? Does it affect people that way, or is it more just a curiosity you're finding?
I find a lot of people who are really, really terrified, and that I've seen people just go completely white, pale, thinking about it again, start to shiver. I remember I had one woman who was, she was a medical worker and had to leave really early to work. She was always on her way, like at 5 o'clock when it was dark, and one of these just kind of popped up out of the ditch at her. And she almost went off the road. And this was a couple weeks later when she was telling me about it. Her husband had called me. She was too frightened to really talk about it. And she just ended up weeping. She was so terrified again. She was one that she felt, she made eye contact with it, and she felt that it was passing on this, not in English, but the message that if she told anyone that she saw it, it would come and find her and get her. And it took her, you know, almost a week to get up her courage to tell her husband about it. So, and she's the one that I think of the most. But, you know, I've seen other people just, they'll start sweating. Their hands are shaking. They'll turn white and then red. They'll stutter. You know, they'll have to stop and put their head in their hands for a minute. Not everybody. There are some people, I mean, I've had a few people who said they saw it and they thought it was just some kind of, it was a really cool thing that they saw it, and they felt privileged, and they didn't feel fear. Most of the time, those people are in a vehicle and just kind of speeding on, you know, or going by. They're viewing it from a pretty safe vantage point. Other people, I know I had four people in South Milwaukee who were chased by one, that jumped out of a cornfield as they were walking. The road they were on actually led down to a cliff over Lake Michigan. So it was kind of an odd place to encounter something like that. And it chased them back to where the streetlights began again, and then it dove back into the cornfield. But they felt, especially the slowest guy who was at the end of it, really felt he could hear its feet pounding behind him, he said, and he could feel it, reaching out for, he had one of those loose cotton shirts on that was kind of it was unbuttoned and it was sort of billowing behind him as he ran. And there were little slash marks in the shirt. And he lent it to me, and I tried to find somebody who would look at it, but there just wasn't really any residue, you know, to prove anything that made those things. But I'll tell you, that guy was terrified. And he was a very strapping, like, 22-year-old student, and he was just absolutely, he went to his mother's house, he and his brother and their friend, and the aunt was there. The aunt was actually the one who called me out of the family. And she said they just acted like, you know, so something had terrified them so bad that they could barely speak. And she felt they would not have come home and made that up to her and their mother.
Well, what's the old saying? You don't have to be the fastest guy. You just got to be the faster than the slowest guy. But
exactly.
So
I only have to outrun you.
Exactly. As long as a good kick to anybody's knee will slow them down enough that you can pull ahead. So has there ever been, through all of your research, has there ever been any documented attacks? I know you're talking about the guy who had his shirt torn and so forth, but is that the furthest of an actual attack that's happened? Or has it mainly seemed like these creatures' main goal is just to get you out of that area? Just, you know, leave us alone, let us be.
Well, according to, you know, my own research, the reports that I've seen, there may be other people who claim to have seen, had reports where people were attacked, but I haven't seen them, so I don't usually, you know, claim to know much about them. But I've had one man, and I've talked about this on radio before, where he was from Quebec, and he was trail hiking by himself, unarmed, and just sort of came face-to-face with an upright wolf-like creature. They looked at each other, and he was just so frightened. He said his body just really didn't know which way to go, and he was, you know, when you meet somebody in a grocery aisle, and you go one way, and then they go that way, and then you go that way, and they go
yeah,
that
exactly.
way.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happened, and he feels like he sort of clumsily got in its way as it was trying to just run past him, because it sort of, it had its mouth open, and one of its fangs kind of grazed his flank and hip as it went past. And he sent me a photograph of the big jagged scar that he had, and he had to go and get stitches, and he told them it was a bear because he did not think that, they would believe what he really saw.
Yeah, you think you'd
that's
be locked
the only...
up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the only known human injury from a man-wolf. But now the Bigfoot are something different, you know. And I actually was hiking with a colleague maybe about 2 years ago through kind of a lesser-used, rougher stretch of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And he's about 6 foot two, 6 foot three, 300 pounds. And I had actually suggested that he try shaking one of the small sapling trees just to see, because I read that this was how Bigfoot communicated with themselves or intimidated other people to get out of the territory, and we thought it might just provoke a reaction or something. So he did that, and a rock came sailing out of nowhere and beamed him right in the head. He had on a baseball cap, but it wasn't very good protection. And I was looking sort of in the direction where the rock came from, and if a person had stood up and thrown it, which they would have had to have done in order for it to have hit him from the angle it came, I certainly would have seen it. I saw nothing, just this rock coming from somewhere out of the bushes and hitting him, and it actually gave him a concussion. He had a little difficulty remembering how to drive home. So, but that I don't believe was a dog man, because they're not made to be able to, A, grasp something like a rock, especially one that big, or B, put their arm back. They don't have rotator cuffs, you know, or arms that are made for branching out and holding things. So I believe it would be really difficult for a dog man to chuck a rock at somebody. And I think
all right.
This was Bigfoot.
All right, so there's never really been any known attack except for, you know, the mistake of that one guy getting caught. But that's a common, like, even when you're dealing with bats, they tell you if you've got bats flying around you not to make any quick movements because they'll go around you. But and it's the people who make the quick movement that end up getting hit by a bat or having issues
right.
with bats. So it's a common thing, especially when dealing with the animal world.
Right, and I do always add the caution that these are only the ones that live to tell the tale. For all we know, I mean, some people could have been killed by one and taken
another.
It's
not like they could have told
again.
You, right? Exactly. It's
exactly.
not like they were there to tell
yep.
you.
Right, right. So, you know, I always do put that. And then I know there are another researcher or two that say that they have, some kind of reports that this kind of thing happened, but there was never any proof for anything like that. So I don't rule it out entirely. I'm just saying in the reports that I've received over 24 years, that's the only one I've had other than the Bigfoot, again, is kind of different. There have been some things with them.
Linda, let's talk evidence. You've had a lot of conversations, a lot of people who've offered their encounters, the stories of their encounters. But has anybody been able to give you anything in the form of concrete evidence of their encounter, whether it's a picture, obviously would be great, or a clump of hair or footprints or anything like that?
Footprints, yes. You know, the footprints are fairly plentiful, and they just, most of the time, for the dog man, they look like large canine prints, like very, very large wolf-type prints, to be more exact. And sometimes, if the prints are made like in soft sand or mud, and the creature is kind of rearing back to spring or to start running, the hock or what we would call the heel and ankle joint that's farther up on the leg will kind of bend down and also contact the ground. And then you get something really interesting that looks kind of like a combination canine and Bigfoot, but really it's just the elongated total footprint with the hock joining with the toe pads, where it's usually the hock is up about a foot above the ground. So they can vary that way. But yeah, we do have footprints. That's probably the best. I've had some people offer some hair, but it turned out to be other animals. And I know this has happened with the Bigfoot, too. The Bigfoot probably leaves a lot more evidence behind. And then, of course, you probably know it's very controversial. There have been attempted DNA studies, and studies have come out saying it's something unknown. And, of course, that's or primate. And even more specific, I won't get into all of that. I'll just let it lie at being controversial. But Bigfoot has more... It has almost more of a culture. You know, it seems to construct these rough semi-shelters of branches, and it is more likely to use, it has hands, so it can interact, hold things, leave things behind. I have a picture in my new book that's coming out that M.K. Davis shared with me, where people had brought him what they believed were samples of Bigfoot fur and possibly Bigfoot droppings, too, you know, and those have come out interesting, too, in when they're examined. So we have those kinds of things. We don't have skeletons. We don't have complete dead carcasses that are known. Maybe they've been found, perhaps. I suspect that if such things were found and the government knew about them, they would be spirited away, and we wouldn't be informed as the public. I just say that from long experience with different government agencies.
Right. We're going to take a break, Linda. We're talking with Linda Godfrey. We're talking about cryptids, specifically the Beast of Bray Road. We're talking about wolfmen, dogmen, Bigfoot, running the gamut here. And we've got a lot more to come. It's Beyond Reality Radio with Jason and JV.
Something on your mind? Call the Beyond Reality Radio listener line now, toll free at 844-687-7669.
Hey gang, it's JV from Beyond Reality Radio, and I just want to remind you that Scarecon is approaching quickly. You need to put it on your calendar. It's September 30th through October 2nd. What is Scarecon, you ask? Well, Scarecon is a fan convention for lovers of paranormal, horror, sci-fi, and pop culture entertainment. The Scarecon weekend includes celebrities from your favorite movies and TV shows, unique vendors, informative panels, film screenings, parties, and much more. It's a weekend full of fun and socializing with some great people. If you need more information about Scarecon, check out the website at scarecon.com. Also, subscribe to the email list for frequent updates. Scarecon is being held September 30th through October 2nd at Turning Stone Casino and Resort in Verona, New York. It'll be the best weekend of the year, and you don't want to miss it. Visit the website at scarecon.com. That's scarecon.com for all of the latest information, and don't forget to check out the Facebook page. See you at Scarecon.
How do you like me now?
Don't forget, the telephone number is 844-687-7669 if you'd like to call and share a story, if you've had an encounter, or you like to talk to Linda Moore and ask a question about any of her books or her research or her encounters herself. Linda, again, thanks for joining us on Beyond Reality Radio. And am I correct in understanding you've had personal experiences? You've actually run into some things along the way during your research?
Yeah, that's true. Yep, I've been out in the field enough that I think if you do spend enough time in the field in areas where these things are sighted, you know, sooner or later it may happen. And I definitely have had some experiences, yes.
What would you say of your experiences stands out to be the most head-scratching for you?
Wow, they really all are head-scratching. I mean, you just kind of, it's like coming up against the abyss. There's this thing that just goes somewhere where you have no experience. And it's a very humbling experience in a lot of ways, because you realize, yep, there really is something out there bigger than me that I don't understand, you know, and perhaps never will. But I've had experiences with what I'm pretty sure were Bigfoot. I've had experiences with, or one experience where I may have seen the back of a man wolf, where it was upright. What I saw was gray fur illuminated for just a second in a spotlight, and the fur was vertical, and it was at least 7 feet tall because it blotted out a reflective road sign as it ran across the road. And someone else saw the same thing at the same time. I was on location with a TV show and some witnesses in Michigan.
Did you get a picture?
No. I had actually, my camera at that time had run out of batteries, everything, and I had put it in the van that the TV crew was using, so I didn't have my camera out functioning anymore, and the cameraman just happened to be pointed down the opposite way.
Well,
when it happened.
I asked that question with a bit of an objective, because I knew the answer would be no, because you would have shared it with us. But it just illustrates, I mean, so many times people will say, well, you know, if you saw this Bigfoot running through the woods, or you saw this running, why didn't you get a picture? But the problem is it happens so instantly, and
right.
And it's also a bit startling and a bit stunning. And to snap that picture, you gotta have your wits about you. And if you actually have something in your hands to snap it with, and the encounter lasts for sometimes fractions of a second or a second or two, and getting a picture sounds a lot easier than it actually is.
Well,
that's really, really true. Yeah, because even if you're holding the camera, you have to aim it and shoot it and make sure you've got it on the right one. I took a fabulous video of a turkey hen pecking at my picture window the week before last, only to realize I had it turned on selfie, you know, when I got done. So it would have been so great. I could have had a million views on YouTube, I'm sure. But I had another experience just about exactly a year ago. It was August of 2015, and a property owner and a colleague of mine were staking out a hayfield at night in an area where I've been helping conduct a two-year study with his property owner. I've been assisting him because he has, we call it the mini Skinwalker Ranch, because he's had all kinds of things. We've been through 17 deer carcasses, which end up mutilated or weird things done to them. You know, the trail cams never work. And we've had a carcass that was out there for a while and nothing was touching it. And we thought, well, maybe there's something else out there that's preventing anything else from coming in. So we were sitting there watching, and we were across, set up across the field, all the way across the field from the tree line where this carcass was. And I happened to notice that there was a light that I at first took for an airplane, except it stopped right over the tree line, and it backed up, and then it went forward again. And I said, guys, that's not an airplane over there. And they both looked, and by at the time, and this is sort of crucial, I think, the time that the three of us all turned our attention fully upon it, it began to move across the field toward us. And it took maybe a minute or 2 minutes to get to us. And the light at that time, you know, didn't look that big. I was getting my camera ready. I was kind of aiming in my viewfinder. It looked minuscule, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to wait till it gets a little closer. And we're all going, what could that be? What is that? You know, what is that thing? Is it a kite with a candle in it, or a balloon, or what is it? And it got to where it was within about 30 feet of the car and maybe 30 feet in the air approximately, and we could see that it was a perfect spherical object that was sort of self-illuminated very evenly. It didn't cast any light on what was around it. It was just sort of self-lit, and it had stopped at that point and was hovering, sort of looking at us. And I was just raising my camera. I'm like, aha, I'm going to get this thing. And the guy who was driving, my colleague, grabbed a large flashlight without saying anything, and he shone it out his window up directly up at the object. And we all swore this later. It hesitated for a moment because, of course, all of our eyes were riveted on it. And then it just kind of went bloop and kind of, I won't say collapsed. It, you know, the way that an LED light will go out sometimes. Yeah. That's kind of how it went, but it wasn't an LED light. It was a globe. It was a sphere, and we all yelled our favorite epithet because it was so shocking. It was just against all the laws of physics. And this particular property owner is a retired math and physics teacher from Chicago. You know, and he was just going out of his court. This can't be. This could not have happened. That's not possible. You know, and it wasn't really. But the thing was, there I had my camera. I was ready to take it, and you know, my own colleague kind of ended that because there, at that point, there was nothing left to take. I might add, he, as soon as that happened, he said, "I have to get out of the car," and he went out of the car, walked around for 30 seconds, and then came back and was deathly white and said, "I'm sick. I have to leave."
Yeah, it sounds almost like you saw like one of the will-o'-the-wisp type things floating.
Something like that. I mean, we call it a UFO because it was unidentified. It was sort of flying. It was an object, but it wasn't like a hard construction of any kind by any means.
Approximately, how big would you say it was, though?
We would say we all estimated it about the size of a basketball.
Okay, so yeah, it would be about the size of the will-o'-the-wisp.
Oh, it could be, some type of flying orb. You know, we don't know what it was, but we do feel that it was aware of us because it was when we all focused on it that it came across the field to us as we all watched, and then, you know, it sort of had that feeling that it was surprised when the flashlight beam hit it.
I know, like, overseas in Russia and so forth, everybody's got dashboard cameras on their cars, and that's why you see a lot of great things showing up on the news. But what do you think it's going to take for us over here to finally catch solid proof of a Bigfoot or this Beast of Bray Road or some sort of a creature that has gone, as of right now, it, you know, it's one of those things. Is it legend? Is it lore? Is there any truth behind it? What do you think it's going to take for us to finally catch something?
I don't know. Perhaps some unprecedented new invention. You know, I was thinking that when everybody had drones, that might actually be something that could sneak up and flash, you know, a picture before something could see
it or
get away.
But those are so hard because I own a bunch of them, and I'll fly them over the backwoods behind my house, and, you know, the wild turkeys are back there all the time. But I'll tell you right now, I'll put the drone up in the air, and I won't be able to see the turkeys from the air.
Yep.
I can see them from the ground, but I can't see them from the air. So
That's why I said I used to think that drones would do it. But, I've just, since they've really come into use, you know, nobody's really gotten anything with it. And I know people have been taking them out into prime Bigfoot territory, you know, in other places. Maybe they'll get refined more. I also have thought maybe those glasses with a little tiny camera attached up in the frame that you just have to tap it, you know, and then you take a picture. But the only trouble with that is the creature would have to be really close to you to get a good shot. And if it's at night, especially, you know, it's just not going to happen. There was a man who had like four different sightings, and this was a guy with high security clearance from Milwaukee Mitchell Airport at a lake not too far from Bray Road. And a friend of mine, whose brother was a policeman, got to borrow police night vision equipment, and we drove around that entire night from sundown till dawn, trying to take pictures of whatever we could see. And there were so many animals that we saw. A fox did not show up on it. We saw a deer. We got part of an eye. You know, when you're driving even slowly, like we were only going 25, 30 miles an hour, and one of us was always sitting holding the camera while the other one drove, and we got really bupkis for the whole night. You know, and it just shows how hard it is, even if you have equipment, you're going slowly, and the camera's set up. There was another anecdote I tell to illustrate how hard this is. We had, for some reason, a bighorn sheep showed up north of Elkhorn, actually right near, not too far from where I live. Nobody knew where it came from. It was this huge thing. It just galloped in one day and was seen around the cemetery and then around certain houses. Eventually, it made its way into town, and it was reported. This woman called me because she had reported it to the DNR agent, and he said, "No, we have no bighorn sheep around here. You're crazy, you know." And so I contacted the DNR agent, and he said, "You know," he said, "I had to eat some humble pie yesterday. The lady is right. I saw it. I was driving along. It crossed the road, running at a dead gallop right in front of my car. I had my camera right on the seat next to me. I pulled over, picked up the camera, and by the time I got the shutter pressed, it was out of sight."
Hey, Linda, we're going to take a phone call here. We've had Jay on the line for quite some time waiting patiently. Jay, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Ms. Godfrey. Okay, the only question I really had for her was, what is the hawk? Is that spelled H-O-C-K? And what part was she referring to with that? I could say that probably the reason that most of these creatures aren't able to be captured photographically or video would be they're too smart for that. They're too quick and intellectual and witty.
Well, do you believe in the interdimensional thing there, Jay, where people are talking?
Oh, I believe in almost everything is possible, honestly.
Okay.
But with the explanation for this. Is Russia is the country of the bear, as America is the country of, let's say, the eagle, but also reptiles, and that's why we have so many of the reptilians represented in both America and Europe. And by the way, that is a phoenix on the back of a dollar bill, not an eagle, that's a satanic symbol. Okay, so the bears is the Russian faction, and that is why, so that's what part of their let's say the alien race or species or colony comes from. That's why Chewbacca was represented in Star Wars. And I even think it could be maybe even tied into Planet of the Apes, but the Bigfoot, Sasquatches, Yetis, all of that probably are interdimensional or tied to them, but they're basically just the worker bees when they're here. To explain more so why some of these creatures look very human-like or have man tied to them, there are shadow government or shadow entities that are splicing humans with animals, and this has been admitted that they're doing this. And then you have the aliens and other interdimensional beings that have been breeding with humans for a long time, and that's where you have a lot of the abductions and things. Not to mention Lucifer and CERN has been unleashing creatures that are or were trapped and now are hiding in our world, and eventually they're all going to be unleashed on us. But as I said before, CERN opened the gates of hell earlier this summer in Switzerland back in June, and now they are continuing to open portals and temporary gateways to and from there.
And you think, and you're suggesting that some of these creatures are directly, that's where they're coming from?
Well, I would believe that the reason why the Bigfoots or Sasquatches and all that, why that's been seen for so long, no, I believe that is tied more to the, to coming from the other dimensions or space, however you want to put it, which is basically one and the same. But here more recently, and as the quickening happens, as we go further into Revelations and more of the seals and the trumpets and all of that, how far along we are, I really suggest people do some research to find out about this, where we are and what is coming and what the mainstream media is not telling you. I won't reveal anything because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I just want people to really do the research and use discernment with these things.
Well, are you referring to the rapture and stuff of that nature, Jay? Are you referring to the rapture? Are you referring to the rapture and things like that?
Yeah, but not just the rapture. I mean,
let me ask you this question, Jay. Let me ask you this question. Why the hell are you not doing? Why the hell are you not doing your own radio show? I mean, you could go on. Yeah, you've got a lot of information. You really do. I mean that in all with the utmost respect. You've got a lot of great information. You should be out there doing your own show.
I don't want to put any more of a target on my back than I may already have.
Jay, we've got to let you go right now because we're getting close to a break, and I wanted to give Linda a chance to respond to your call. But thanks so much for calling. It's always education when we get you on the line. Linda, any thoughts on any of that?
Well, his one actual question was what the hawk is on the animal's leg. And that would be, if you think about your dogs, when it makes its little paw prints, and you look up its leg, people will often say of dogmen, well, their legs were bent backwards. But actually what they're seeing is what would be, if we stood on our tiptoes where our heel is, the heel and ankle joint, that would be analogous to the hock on a four-legged animal. And it consequently looks like the leg is bent backwards. But we're expecting to see a knee, but we're seeing the heel.
Right.
And that's all that means.
Time is flying by. We don't have a whole lot left here, and we've got another phone caller for Linda. We want to go to the line. This is Chris. Welcome to Beyond Reality Radio, Chris.
How are you doing tonight, Dale?
Great, thank you.
Good, welcome to the show.
My question was for Linda. There was a show that was on, I'm sure you might be familiar with, Les Stroud from Survivor Man. He did a couple of episodes of doing Survivor Man with a man that was after a Sasquatch. And in the episodes, he had footage of Sasquatch walking up a mountainside. And then at the very end, they actually show where he had the camera set up in a still motion somewhere and captured a clear picture of Sasquatch, hidden behind leaves. And I was wondering if you've seen the show, or maybe you talk to the man that Les Stroud did the show with and get your take on if you had seen what was on TV.
Yeah, great question, Chris. Have you seen that show, Linda?
I think I've seen that clip. I don't think I've seen the whole show, but I've seen that clip that he's talking about, and it looked pretty good to me. There's so many blobsquatch things that you see out there that you get kind of jaded after a while. And that one looked decent. I do think that there are probably a number of fairly blurry shots that really are like what you're taking a picture of. Say you're taking a picture of your dog and the dog runs through. You know it was your dog, but somebody just looking at your picture because it was running and blurry couldn't say, yeah, that's a dog. I think that often happens when people, are taking pictures of these animals. Right. And if they are indeed animals. There's, of course, another theory that if they are coming from other dimensions, that they are not in the same light wave vibration that we are, and so they don't register on are instruments that are made to capture things fully in our dimension.
Where can people find out more about your books and more about what you're up to?
Well, the best place to start is lindagodfrey.com. No www. It's my blog. You can find recent stories there. There is a link to my new book coming out October 11th from Tartar Penguin Random House, Monsters Among Us, an Exploration of Otherworldly Bigfoots, Wolfmen, Portals, Phantoms, and Odd Phenomena.
Kind of what we were just talking about, huh?
Exactly, yeah. And only it's far more shocking. It's really a lot of reports, the likes of which I've never received before, and ones that seem to be associated with anomalous things. And the full report of that two-year study with this gentleman in his field here in southeastern Wisconsin will be in it, other things like that. And it's available for pre-order on Amazon and other places. You can just go to lindagodfrey.com and you'll see the place to click for that and a little more information about it. And I'm going to be at the Milwaukee Paracon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on the October 14th and 15th. Earlier that week, I'm going to be on one of the New York Daily News shows. You can watch my blog for precise information on that. I can't release the exact date yet. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff because of that book coming out on the 11th. My October is pretty busy and booked, and I'm going to be putting a new listing. If you go to lindagodfrey.com, there's an About page, and you can find book lists, bios, and a calendar that I'm going to be updating. I swear that I will. I keep saying that. We're in buying and selling a house hell at the moment, you know, and it's been going on all summer. But, yeah, that just keep going to lindagodfrey.com, and eventually you'll find all the keys to the kingdom right there for everything else.
Now, I have to say, I visited your website. In fact, I'm on it now, and I'm looking at a picture of you with John Zaffis, and I just have to ask you, how do you get mixed up with a character like that?
What a horrible individual. I'm just kidding. Johnny's a very good friend of ours.
I just came back. Oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah,
in fact, I have a new picture up of me with Rosemary Guiley, both of which were taken different years at the Michigan Paracon up in the Sioux, which they get like 1,200 people. I mean, they're out in the middle of nowhere, really. Yeah. And, 1,200 attendees. It's a great, great Paracon. I'm just back from that. It was this past weekend.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us tonight and talking about all these weird creatures that you've dealt with and you've written about throughout the years.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and it did go so fast. Is your show a vortex? I think that it is.
Feels that way sometimes.
A time vortex.
Sometimes we think it's a black hole. I'm not sure which it is.
Depends on the day of the week. So, well, you have a very good night, hon, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you to both of you for having me on. Anytime, I'd love to come back.
Thank you, Linda.
Awesome.
Linda Godfrey, and we appreciate her coming on. By the way,
She's great.
Yeah, she is. And I just wanted to, I didn't mention it before, but thank you to Chris for his phone call and his good question there. We had to let him go because we went into break. But I always love talking about this stuff, and I always find it very fascinating. I wish my memory was just a little bit better because I see this weave of connections that go between our guests, you know, like Lyle Blackburn and some of the things he was talking about and how it connects to some of the things that Linda was talking about, and how it connects to the gentleman that we had from Alabama.
Jeez, did you take your insure today, Jim? What the heck? Come on, you're not even old. What's going on with you?
I know. There's just too many things going on in my head. But it's pretty amazing how these theories and stories start to intertwine and connect, and it starts to create a pretty interesting pattern and a picture of what these creatures are and how we might eventually maybe be able to get evidence and proof of their existence.
Thanks for listening. It's Beyond Reality Paranormal. We'll see you next time.